Welcome. You're listening to the Media Talk 101 podcast. Media Talk 101 was founded in 2005 as a nonprofit ministry dedicated to teaching media discernment in the light of following Christ. Visit MediaTalk101.org for helpful articles, videos, and other resources, including our award-winning documentary, Captivated, Finding Freedom in a Media Captive Culture. And you can also check out our brand new website and event, the 2014 Christian Worldview Film Festival, which you can find at ChristianWorldviewFilmFestival.com. Once again, that's ChristianWorldviewFilmFestival.com. I'm your host, Philip Telfer. I'm the founder and the president, and I'm back in the studio again today with my friend and co-worker and co-host, Rhett Simpkins. And how are you doing today, Rhett?
I'm doing well. How are you, Philip?
Pretty good. I've had an interesting week. Just a minute. I got a phone call coming in here. Hold on.
Okay.
Yeah, hello? Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. No problem. I'm just recording a podcast here with Rhett. It's not a big deal. What's that? Thursday? Yeah, I think so. I think that would work. Yeah, that was funny. Uh-huh. I know. Yeah, wasn't that great? Yeah, okay. That sounds good. Well, no problem. I'll talk to you soon. Hey, yeah, call anytime. Later. Okay, sorry about that, Rhett. Where were we?
I think you were just introducing the podcast.
Oh, yes. That's right. I was just asking you about how you were doing. I think you told me you were doing fine, and I was just about to tell you how I've been doing.
Yeah. So how have you been doing?
Just a minute here. Just got a text. Hold on.
Okay.
Yeah, I know it's supposed to be kind of uncomfortable silence, you know, when for broadcasting, but, you know, I think this could be important. So let me just get back to this person real quick. I'll get back with you. Hold on.
Okay.
Man, I wish I was a little quicker at this. I think, 42 years old and... Okay. Okay. Oh, right. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Now, where were we at again?
You were telling me about your week.
Oh, yes. My week.
Hang on. Can you wait a second?
Yeah, no problem.
Oh, hello? Yeah, no, that's okay. Yeah, I was just talking with Philip. We're recording a podcast. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Okay, yeah, that's not a problem. Let me see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can do that. Okay. Yeah, no, don't worry about it. That's fine. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Bye. Sorry about that, Philip.
No problem. At least, I guess it's not a problem. Or maybe it is. Actually, okay. All right. I think our podcast listeners have figured it out by now. Rhett and I are just pulling your chain here. We're going to talk about something. We're going to talk about something this week, and that is cell phone etiquette. And I don't know about you, but things have gotten out of hand. And before we jump into that topic of cell phone etiquette, there's some other things we want to talk about that are in the news. And so I'm going to start out, and then I'm going to turn it over to Rhett. He's going to mention a couple things as well. But we figure for our for those who are tuning in, that might be some of our newer podcast listeners wondering, are there any updates about the 2014 Christian Worldview Film Festival? And I have a few updates. And the first thing is I'll be having a meeting on Thursday this week with a large enough church in San Antonio that I think is willing to be a venue for us for our film festival and our filmmaking workshops that we'll be holding. And the hope is that we'll be doing this either towards the latter part of February or the early part of March, depending on the church schedule and their calendar. And so we got some progress. We're moving forward. Plus, I've been spending a lot of time talking with some friends and acquaintances in the Christian filmmaking community who have already put to practice training others in specific fields of filmmaking. And I've been reaching out to them to put together some workshops where filmmakers can get a variety of instruction on various things. And so that we're building that as well. And we all are also working towards putting up our guidelines for film submissions, which I hope will be up on the website by the end of this week, which means we'll be opening the website up to your film submissions. If you have a film ready to go, we want to encourage you to do that sooner rather than later, and we'll have more information coming on that. But anyway, there's a lot of momentum moving forward with this, and we appreciate those of you who are helping us get the word out. And so if you do use social media networks of various kinds, whether it's Twitter or Facebook, I don't know what else is out there, but you can help us by just letting people know. You can go to the Facebook page that we have, the Christian Worldview Film Festival Facebook page. You can like that or not. You know us here at Media Talk 101. We're like, yeah, you can take it or leave it. If you're on there and you want to do something good and you want to do something helpful for a good cause, go ahead and like us or not. We're not going to be offended. We're not so hung up that this is a must. And if you want to cancel your Facebook account and just spend more time with face-to-face examples, then. Was that you again calling me, Rhett? No, I left my phone on. This is somebody entirely different calling me, and I'm going to turn that off. We're not going to continue that skit. So, anyway, where was I at?
If you don't want to like us on Facebook, that's okay.
That's all right, yeah. And if you want to cancel your account and do something better with your time and spend more time with face-to-face relationships, we think that's a good thing, too. So, all right. So, what else was in the news this week before we jump into our topic of cell phone etiquette?
Well, we got an article sent to us from our faithful podcast listener, Jim. And it's a CBS article that's titled, "Doctors Raise Red Flag, Young Children Should Avoid Using Tablets." And
okay, wow.
Yeah. So, we always appreciate when people send us those articles.
And what's the gist of the article, Rhett?
Basically, doctors are concerned that children using specifically tablets, but media in general, I would assume, are not, spending that time developing real skills. So they're, sitting for hours on end using a device instead of actually learning motor skills and developing body functions.
All right. Well, hey, I guess the argument could be made. They're getting better at running apps on iPads, mm-hmm. And other tablets. To me, some of these things are just a confirmation of what common sense should be telling us. Mm-hmm. That, especially toddlers and young children, they have, there's a lot of things that they need to be doing, and playing with screens is probably shouldn't be a priority. And, they can be so creative if we let them, so we're a big proponent of blocks and crayons and doing real things. But I have to confess, I mean, when I first got a smartphone, it was very tempting, to download some apps for my children. And I quickly saw how this became a stumbling block. I mean, even simple things like the drawing apps on a phone, where you can, turn your phone over to your child and they use their finger to get a color from the palette and they draw a picture. Or there was even one that was even more ridiculous in my opinion, but the kids liked to do it, and it brought up like a, it looked like a coloring book page, you know, so it had some sort of just line art of something, and then they could pick a color and then they would touch a section and it would just fill that section in with color, you know, and they could, you know, do, it was like a coloring book app. But and they really liked it, and they wanted my phone all the time. And this is while I was, while I was a little bit ignorant, you know, and then I began to realize, now wait a minute, this is not helping them learn how to color or manage things. This is just a stumbling block, and I would rather them sit down with a piece of paper and some crayons, especially at that age, and do something real. And I had to wean the kids off. Eventually, I just got rid of the apps. And but even a year after I got rid of the apps, it was interesting how some of my little kids, they were still asking me about that. Hey, you know, do you still have that thing on your phone? I'm like, no, nope, no more. I've hopefully gained a little wisdom since then, and realized this was not something helpful for you. And go get a, so if they'd ask me, hey, can I color on your phone? I said, no, go get a piece of paper and go get some crayons or a pencil and you can color on that. You know, that I'm all for. So I'm not against coloring. It's just that doing that on a phone or a tablet is not helpful, you know, for them. And so, you know, there are obviously some doctors and people that are working with children that are concerned. And that's what this article was about. But I think that the average, hopefully, you know, common sense would tell us, yeah, that makes sense. You know, we probably should help children focus their energy in other ways rather than just touching a screen. You know, it's kind of exciting, you know, I think for a child to be able to touch a screen and see something somewhat magical happen. You know, it's like when you're, it's like, wow, stuff happens when I touch the screen. Magical is not the right word, but I don't know what else to use. It's something that's you know, it's somewhat surreal. And I think that's the attraction to a lot of these things, is that you put out very little effort and you get quite a bit of back from that very little effort. And so what else do we have in the news this week that's kind of caught your attention?
Well, I've recently learned about a new thing called Snapchat, and it's really quite strange, in my opinion.
You're going to have to fill me in on this a little bit. You know, Snapchat, I saw it in the news this week because, before we even tell you what it is, I mean, of course, our media savvy, the digital natives that are listening to this are going to be rolling their eyes right now and groaning like they don't know what Snapchat is, and they're doing a podcast about media. These guys have got to get a clue. But not all of our listeners are digital natives. Some of us are, like myself, are digital immigrants, you know, so these things come a little slower. And so I saw in the news this week, you know, in the technology section of Google News. And once again, that's one of my go-to places where I get news. I like Google News, and I looked at the technology section. I see that Snapchat refused a $3 billion buyout offer from Facebook. You're going like, wow, that's a pretty big deal, $3 billion. And then later on in the week, if I saw it right, maybe I misread the headlines. I don't always read the articles if they don't, you know, if I don't think they're worth my time, but. Even more recently, I saw a headline that it appears that they even turned down an offer from Google that might have been even for more. So Snapchat, it's in the news. So what is it, Rhett? Clue us in.
Well, it's, I guess, kind of like texting, but when you send, you take a picture of yourself and then you send it, and then the receiver sees the picture and your text for, I guess, between 1 and 10 seconds. And so it just goes back and forth sending pictures. It's just like a picture message, but it's like hyper picture messaging.
Okay, but what happens after 10 seconds?
Well, then the picture disappears, I guess.
Oh, wow. Well, I could see some issues with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so actually, So in the news with this whole Snapchat thing, isn't one of the controversies that very thing, that this has become kind of the go-to app for things like sexting, which is this phenomena?
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
You know, so this whole phenomena, which began, you know, you can send images via text, but of course, you know, I got a picture via text from, and it was great. It was from, I serve at Living Water Fellowship in Bulverde, Texas, as one of four pastors, and one of our pastors is on vacation with his family in Hawaii. You know, and we're so jealous. We're just like, oh, they're blessed. Sent a text to the other pastors of him surfing on a surfboard, you know, and that was great. I love that. You know, it's very innocent and a great way to share a memorable moment, and I'm glad for it. But you know, that picture is on my phone. You know, it's there for good. But this idea of Snapchat is the same thing, right? So you can text someone essentially a picture, but after 1 to 10 seconds after they see it, it disappears. So this would certainly, you know, for those who were wanting to do unlawful things or things that were not discreet or things that were scandalous or sensual, I mean, this is definitely a tool that can be a stumbling block, because it allows people that convenience that they want of sending obscene images of themselves to somebody else, and then it supposedly disappears. So anything else you have to share about that, Rhett? I mean, it's, once again, these are, boy, there's just something new, it seems like, every week that pops up.
Yeah, it's, to me, it just seems like one new conduit for folly, you know? It's just, like, what's the purpose for it? And, yeah, you know, my exposure to it was, I was, you know, having a family gathering, and some family members that were younger than myself they knew about it, and they were into it, and they were sending pictures, and I said, what are you doing? You know? And so they tried to explain it to me, and I was just like, I actually asked, I said, why? And they were just, I don't know, just nonchalantly, yeah, just 'cause. And so, yeah, you know, and that's kind of weird.
It's a whole other subject that I'd like to explore sometime, is just our fixation of pictures. We don't have time to go into that now, but it is something that I've been contemplating for several years now, that the reason is with a lot of the traveling that we've done as a family, I've found that even taking pictures can become a stumbling block, because there's what we call camera stress, you know, in the RV, you know, when we're driving down the road and you see something pretty, something beautiful, something interesting, and then it's like, where's the camera? Where's the camera? And someone's rushing around to find the camera. You're passing by this moment. You're going to miss it if you don't capture it here in the next few seconds. Or maybe it's this amazing sunset that's going down, and then you can't find the camera, and then once you find it, the battery's dead, or you know, something's in the way, and it's what I call camera stress. And I've seen this in our household. And so one of the things I began to tell my family several years ago was just take a memory. And it was somewhat tongue-in-cheek, you know, like, forget the camera, take a memory. But the reason why, and that's not exactly the case, because here I said we need to talk about this later, but I'm going to share some of these thoughts, because, you know, when I was saying take a memory, the reality is that there are a lot of things that we experience that we really can't log in our minds. There are some things that do stick in our heads, you know, but there are many experiences that we're going to have throughout our life, like a beautiful sunset that you're going to enjoy in that moment. But it's not going to stick there. And that's why we have the sense, like, we want to capture that. And so that's what photography does. And there's nothing wrong with that in itself, except that I think it begins to first of all, foster this this mentality of, like, the only way I can truly enjoy this moment is if I capture it. But, you know, one of the things that I was teaching about in church on Sunday was this practice that even the Jews had, based on Psalm 24:1, that where it says the earth is the Lord's and all of its fullness, and that's a paraphrase. I don't have it right in front of me right now, but this idea that all these things belong to God, and therefore whatever is good, whatever is something that is a blessing to us, we should bless God. We should bless him. You know, so whether it's food, you know, when Jesus, it says that he broke the bread and blessed, you know, we have the word blessed it, and we get this idea that he was blessing the bread, but really what he was doing was blessing God for the bread that had been provided. And so we should be grateful and thankful, and I think that we have a culture that doesn't know how to take these moments that are, you know, there might be a moment just between us and our Creator by mm-hmm. some of his creation, and we should be able to look at that sunset and say, you know what? Thank you, God. And this is just like an offering of thanks that's just for this moment. And there'll come other moments, but it's not necessary for me to have to capture all of these special moments. I can simply receive this moment and give thanks to God for it. But instead of us giving glory and thanks to God during these moments, what are we doing? We're scrambling for the camera. I've mm-hmm. got to get the camera. You know, I've got to somehow preserve this. And I think all of this desire to preserve, and once again, we're not talking about a picture once in a while, you know, for the family photo album. It's hyper. You know, it's taking pictures all the time, trying to collect every moment of every day. And, you know, thankfully, hard drive space is cheap. You know, you can, you know, storage is very affordable because, boy, you can fill up a hard drive with videos and pictures very quickly. And then we don't even know how to manage these. And that has become, but I think what this is a culture that's continually grounded in the temporal rather than the internal. You know, we don't have this eternal perspective that, you know, this is a temporary place and we're just passing through. And yes, it's okay to capture moments and memories, but there comes a point where things just get out of hand and we've lost sight. You know, and let's get back to our theme verse for our ministry, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Now, boy, we've gone on and on and haven't even got to our subject yet. So let me segue into that, Rhett, by reading also an article that was brought to my attention. And actually, this was a newspaper. We had a stack of newspapers up in Illinois that were for starting fires in the wood stove. And so they were people, we asked people, hey, if you have newspapers, give them to us because we use them to start fires. So, but my wife Mary found this. It's from the Chicago Tribune, and it was from this summer, from August. And it was an article, it was an interview of an author of a book about relationships, and they had a little Q&A. But the last question that they asked about friendships and relationships had to do with social media. And it says, how has social media changed friendships? And so this author responded by saying this, it has magnified insecurities and it has trivialized the whole idea of what a friendship is. Social media is largely a popularity contest. Friendship is a private thing. So what you share on Facebook is not what we would share privately with each other. Being someone's friend is not just sharing information on a timeline. It's something particular and personal and precious. And when I read that, I thought, wow, that's really good. And this is another example of unbelievers who are thinking more deeply than a lot of Christians mm-hmm. on these subjects. But we're trying to change that. We're trying to provoke better thought through podcasts like this. And so what we wanted to talk about today is cell phone etiquette. And why don't you share, Rhett, you're younger. You're part of the younger generation. And does it bother you like it bothers me if you're in the middle of a conversation and all of a sudden the person you're talking to completely breaks away from the conversation to stare at their phone or to respond to a text message or to check their email or the weather or whatever?
Oh, yeah. It absolutely irritates me. But what's worse than that is, you know, oftentimes people aren't just breaking away from the conversation. They're not even engaged in the conversation at all. And they're oftentimes, in my experience, texting under the table or, you know, trying to do it secretly, but they're not engaged in what's going on around them at all. And that irritates me even more, I would say.
So it's the lack of focus, you mm-hmm. know, on the people that are in their presence. And this comes back to, you know, let me back up a little bit. You know, when cell phones first started becoming more of the norm, you know, they kind of, it was gradual at the beginning. I mean, cell phones in the early days were big, monstrous things, and you know, you kept them in your car and you could make a call from your car, but you weren't packing this briefcase into the restaurant with you, you know. But once the technology got better and cell phones were more accessible, then the first thing that came up, which was really uncomfortable for a lot of people, was this first wave of poor use of this technology, and it would be in these public settings, so a restaurant, and all of a sudden you're trying to have a meal, or you're out on a date with your wife, and you're out with your family, and you're trying to enjoy this time, but the person at the table next to you is yakking on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
And when this phenomena first started, it irritated everybody except the person who was on the call. The person who was on the call thought they were cool. Ha ha! I got a phone. I got a cell phone. You know, and I can talk to people at any time. I mean, there was a cool factor to it, and there was this sense. It's like the guys with the cars with the loud music. You know, the big booming woofers. You know, that come up behind you. They're the only ones who think it's cool. You know, and nobody around them thinks it's cool. I mean, it's obnoxious. And the same thing. Here they are in the restaurant talking, and it's disrupting everybody. But you know, it didn't take long for that to become so normative that, first of all, then it's no longer cool because everybody's got a cell phone. But then it's no longer a big deal whether you're on your phone or whether you're not. But then it went from just talking on the phone to now the exchanging of data, you know, so email or texting. And now it became a device of constant distraction to be connected with people that were not in the room. And by the way, this is a very new phenomena. And in our documentary Captivated, we actually start out with talking about the invention of the telegraph in 1844 by Morse's telegraph. And he, you know, in 1844, this was a game-changing technology which allowed human beings to communicate simultaneously across distance for the first time in history. And prior to that, you could do some things from a short distance. So, you know, there was such a thing as smoke signals, or you could use lights, or even carrier pigeons were not, you know, simultaneous, you know. But when you think of simultaneous communication across distance, you really couldn't effectively do that. Even if you could put up a smoke signal, it wasn't like you could respond immediately with another smoke signal to communicate back to that person. So it really wasn't until the invention of the telegraph where mankind could do that, where you could not be in the same place and you can actually go back and forth. And this changed the way we began to communicate. And early on, it was just the telegraph operators. But then when phones started coming into homes and other technologies, it began to work its way into our culture. And we began to be a culture that was being distracted from the people in our presence with those who are not present. And this is the thing that I think is most frustrating. And when we were interviewing Maggie Jackson for Captivated, you know, she talked about this quite a bit. And one of the things she mentioned was what she called prioritizing presence. And what she meant by that was we need to let people know that are in our presence, the people that are around us, that they're important to us. In fact, they're the most important at the moment because we are present with them. And so that is where we should start, because we're going to, you know, we can talk about phone etiquette here because that's what we said we were going to talk about. But we always like to get to the root of things. You know, what's the heart of it? And the heart of it is others. And really, that's the heart of Christ, is not just, I'm not here just for me. It says that Jesus humbled himself and became a man and to the point of death on a cross for our sakes, for us. So he humbled himself for us. And he came not thinking of just of himself, he came thinking of others. And we're to have that same attitude in us, that we are a people who don't just prioritize our own, the things that we want or the things that matter to us. We are prioritizing others. And that's going to be reflected in our use of technology. We're going to be conveying what our heart is, whether others around us are more important, or whether my personal agenda is more important. And that's going to take some work. Another phrase that Maggie Jackson used, which I really loved, was she says, we need to have a what she called a renaissance of attention. And I like that, a renaissance of attention, that we would begin to once again see how important it is to give priority, to give attention to the people who are right around us. Because now we have households, you could have families that live in the same house, but they're so disconnected from one another. They're connected to other people outside of the home at any given moment. And maybe all of them at any given moment are connected to people outside the home, but they're not connected to each other. So we all recognize the problem. So what do we do about it? What are some action steps? What can we do to train ourselves to do better? You have any ideas, Rhett? What are some of your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, my wife and I have talked about this quite a bit. And you know, one thing we had to start doing several years ago was just making sure that we weren't going to do that, and putting some limitations on our own use of cell phones. So we made it a rule in our household to turn the phone off at dinner time. You know, we were being interrupted as a family, so we just turned it off. That was kind of our first real boundary that we set.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Anything else? I mean, I know that's a good starting point.
Well, I wish, you know, it was easier to put limitations on other people. I was actually, just because it would be easier than confronting them, I suppose. But when I was leading the youth group for several years, one thing, you know, cell phones didn't exist when I was in high school. Or, I mean, they existed, but nobody had them. And so it was kind of a phenomenon for me to start seeing so many young people using them and then using them in ways that weren't kind to those around them. And so as I would teach, I would be constantly interrupted or distracted, and those other students would be distracted by cell phone use. So one thing I did was I just, you know, kind of made a rule that if you come into the room, you had to put your device into what we called the cell phone bucket. And, you know, what was interesting is it worked phenomenally, not because they would put their devices in the bucket, but they started to learn how to use them or to not use them when they were in that environment, in order that they could keep it, because they didn't want it out of their own hands. And so they figure, if I'm not, you know, having it out and texting or taking a call, then, you know, I'm secure with it being in my own pocket. And so, you know, after a few months of doing that, we didn't have any problems. And so it was interesting to see how they learned, hey, you know, there are appropriate places for this, but this isn't one of them. So I would love to have a cell phone bucket at my front door, honestly.
You know, I've heard of that. In fact, I talked to an elderly couple who were so frustrated with their grandkids coming over to visit and then spending all their time on their electronic devices that they decided to have a collection plate, you know, at the door, a little bucket, some sort of basket where they would collect all of their grandkids' electronic devices. And of course, you know, there was the response they received were groans and a little pushback, but they, you know, said, hey, you know, when you're here, we want to spend time with you. You know, so the grandparents are saying, we want to prioritize presence, you know, that you are present with us, and we want to take advantage of that. And you know what? They said their grandkids had fun. You know, they really enjoyed their time when they were forced to kind of put it away. Now, one of the things that I don't always do it very well, but I'm trying to do this. These are areas that I struggle with, you know, because I have a smartphone. It's on my person most of the time. And at any given point of the day, you know, there's email coming in, there's text messages, there's phone calls. And because I work out of the home, you know, I'm always in my office, and it's like you're always on call, especially as a pastor. You know, you just seem like you're always on call. And so I have to guard. So one of the things I've been trying to do is train myself not to respond to my phone just because it buzzes or beeps, or actually I always keep it on vibrate. I turned it on for our little sketch there, but generally I keep it on vibrate, and In fact, I'll be, you know, in the mornings, I'll have a coffee with my wife, Mary, and we'll sit down, we'll read the scriptures together, or we do it in the evening as well. And there's been many times she says, hey, your phone is, your phone is vibrating. Are you going to check that? And I'm like, nope. In fact, I've even learned to kind of tune it out and not focus on it so much. And that can be a frustration to people because there are these expectations. And that's one of the things that I've... It's been great having you on staff, because you never answer your phone.
And, yeah, that's true.
Most people wouldn't think that that's a good thing, but you're a hard guy to get a hold of, and you've been that way for years.
Yeah.
You're so atypical for your culture, you know. Whereas there's this expectation of being able to connect with people, and I have to tell you, people, Rhett Simpkins is one of the hardest guys to get a hold of, especially by cell phone, you know. So I think I'd have better luck sending carrier pigeons.
Yeah.
But I remember even before you were on staff, you know, I'd want to try to get a hold of you, and you'd never pick up your phone. It's just, I'd have a heart, you know. It's like, man, I got to go chase this guy down. I got to go find him. You know, mm-hmm. It's the only way I'm going to be able to communicate with Rhett. But you know what? I've never seen that as a downside. I've seen that as a plus. I'm like, that's great. I wish more people were like that. And I wish more people would give me the grace and others the grace that, you know what, I'm going to give priority to the people I am present with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that I won't get back with you or I won't return a phone call or return an email, but that's going to get put in a hopper of priority. And it's going to have less of a priority than the people that are in my presence. And so that's something I want to focus on. So when I'm in a public place, here's another thing that you can do that's just, and maybe you've got some better ideas, and we want to welcome you to submit your ideas to you can send us an email to podcast@mediatalk101.org. But the other thing is when I'm in a group setting or in the presence of others, and here's one of the scenarios. The phone, I can see my phone is vibrating. There's a phone call, and I know it's a phone call coming in. Now, if I think that it might be at all my wife calling, that has a little more priority for me. Or if my wife and I are out on a date, and I know it could be my oldest daughter who's babysitting, so that these are scenarios where I might check the phone. But I always, if I'm in the presence of others, I will excuse myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'll look at them. And I'll say, would you mind if I excuse myself for a moment to just check this phone call or even to take this phone call? Usually it'll just be to check. A quick glance, but I actually give the person in my presence, you know, I say, look, this conversation means a lot to me, and I don't mean to be distracted. I mean, that's not my priority here, but could I excuse myself? So it's one little step. And that usually people are responsive to that, like, oh, no problem, you know. And if it is what I feel a phone call that needs priority, then I will even excuse myself, and I'll usually explain, this is my wife, and I generally give her, you know, priority when it comes to phone calls. So would you mind if I stepped away for a moment and return this phone call? People are. And that may not be perfect. Maybe I need to not answer my phone at all in those situations. But it's an endeavor. It's a step that I'm trying to take to find ways to show the people that I'm around that this is important. You know, their presence is important. But it takes some training. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe you've got some better ideas. We'd love to hear them. So we spent most of the time talking about other things than phone etiquette, but you know, we can certainly take this topic up again, especially if you send us an email and you say, hey, well, I'd love for you to consider this, or here's an idea that I have, or this is something that I've done that's been helpful. And we'd be glad to expand this conversation a little more. So we were kind of all over the map today. That's kind of been the rule of thumb for our podcasts of late. It may not always be the case, but we're, you know. So... with that, we just want to remind you that the goal here is to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, to run the race with endurance. and to recognize that this race that we're running is not, we don't run it solo. You know, that the race that we're running in community. We're running in the community of our homes. We're running in the community of our churches. We're running within community of the broader community around us, and people are watching our lives. People are, our children are taking cues from us. The people we're mentoring or that are mentoring us, you know, all of these things do affect our relationships, and we need to work a little harder at this. So thank you again for tuning in to this week's podcast, and join us next week.
You've been listening to the MediaTalk 101 podcast. Visit MediaTalk101.org for helpful articles, videos, and other resources. Click on the audio tab to get a free download of Philip's audiobook, What Wouldn't Jesus Do? Media Choices in the Light of Following Christ. And if you haven't seen our award-winning documentary Captivated, Finding Freedom in a Media Captive Culture, be sure to order your copy today. Parents Television Council calls it deft and powerful, and numerous moms, dads, and pastors say it's a must-watch for every Christian family and church. If you have a question or a topic you would like to have discussed on this program, please send an email to podcast@mediatalk101.org.